But now you can be sure it'll take some time before it comes back, because the young people just aren't there.
Where are their interests? Is it all tending towards biological, biochemistry area?
Well, in large number, they certainly are. Yeah, I mean, to be a mechanistic organic chemist, you have to be intensely interested. You have to stay with a problem and think about it for a long, long time. Molecular biology seems to me to have made it possible to do new things without hard intellectual, frustrating intellectual work that goes on for years before you see what to do. That is, it's relatively easy at this stage. Now, it too will come to a stage where go back over parts of organic chemistry, the analysis of natural products. There was a time at the beginning when it was exceedingly difficult not only to isolate substances, but then to establish their structure. And then it went through a period when it wasn't quite so difficult. And more and more persons could get into it. And now you would say that isolating a natural product and determining its structure, if it was difficult, you just must have some masochistic streak running in you. There are ways of doing it very easily. And E.J. Corey, for example, believes that as far as in synthesis, it's gone through that stage that they were. In the early years, it was really tough. And it was a tremendous challenge. And the persons who stayed with it had enormous stamina and fortitude and determination to get it through. And what he says, when you get around to interviewing him, is, well, you know, if the molecular weight is 1,000 or below, and it's a natural product, which means that it's been made, then you can make it. And so I think he's convinced that synthesis is sort of going the way of
Well, do you think, coming back to what you said earlier, with the advent of the instrumental techniques that we have available today that didn't exist when you were at Columbia, does that allow you to ask more challenging questions now?
Yeah.
Yes. Because you now have different techniques available to probe even further.
Yes, I think without any question that's true. But when a new technique comes along, then a person active in the subject asks, now what does that allow me to do? How does that allow me to think in directions that I would have cut off because they weren't leading to any experimentally related outcome? And to that extent, I think you find a few persons always pushing those techniques to their limit within a matter of 2, 3, 4, 5 years, that you use them up pretty quickly.
Well, you did you had the terium and people that could help you with that very early on at Columbia. If they hadn't been there, you probably wouldn't have used that.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. And if deuterium hadn't existed, I would never have thought of trying to discover it.
Okay. Well, we've discussed briefly a lot of your papers. We could spend more time on that, but someone gave me a photocopy of this, and I realized that the same picture is right over here.
I think it is. Yeah,
it looks like the same one.
It is the same one.
Yes. What was the occasion of that?
God, what was the occasion of it? It's abroad. It's in Paris. See, as I remember it, beyond that, I don't remember the occasion. I think it was a Sivagagi conference.
I'm struck by one thing in looking at the photograph, and that is one, that the beard, and number two, there's no bow tie, but a regular tie.
And a regular tie. Terrible. Disgraceful. Now, I grew the beard quite explicitly very shortly after I arrived here in 67, because that was the time of the student unrest. Mm-hmm. And I was teaching under the Chem 20, the undergraduate course. And at that time, and even today, certainly the majority of the students were pre-meds with the intention of going to medical school. But they were obviously getting in their way. Organic chemistry is required for admission to medical school, and things were getting worse and worse. Finally, to reach a point where the university said nobody has to take a final examination this year. You can all take makeup exams. And you would agree with me, I think, that to come back after a summer in which you will have been spending your time on God knows what, and take a makeup examination in the fall, is going to reduce your chances of doing as well as you would have if you'd taken it in the spring at the regular time. And I was very worried about that, as in one course after the other, they threw in the towel and joined the movements. And so I did two things. I mean, one, I wanted to make it clear to them that I wasn't a part of the establishment, and it just crossed my mind that growing a beard in those days would do that, would help. And then the other thing I did, I had from the Council for a Livable World a wonderful film based on, it was put out by the Army in Japan, based on Hiroshima. And the Army wouldn't release it, and the Council did get it released. That's the only, well, I know we did that. We did nothing else. And this was a very, really deeply moving film of footage taken from Japanese photographers and so on. About a 20-minute film, and I said, look, I know that the questions that you're all concerned with are of intense interest and to you and importance to you, but it's going to be a long life, and taking the examination in this course, keeping up studying with it, is very important for you. But I think it puts things into perspective if you see this film, and I'm nobody's required to see it, and I'll just put it on at the end of one of the, you know, last lectures. Almost, I guess all of them stayed. You have never seen such a shocked bunch of kids in your life. I mean, to talk about, you know, things being wrong in society was one thing, but to see this film was another. The upshot of it was that almost 90% of them took the final examination. And it wasn't for years after that that I finally shaved the beard off, and that only happened because I'd had too much to drink and someone shaved off one half of it. And so then I had the serious question to face. What to do? And I decided it was more sensible to shave the second half off.
Are there any areas that I haven't touched on that you would like to comment on?
I could say a few words about my Chinese venture.
Oh, yes. That's right, because that was one thing on my list I didn't ask you about. I'm glad you brought that up.
And I think that's certainly the kind of venture that I got into, you know, as a direct result of having known René DeBose and Leo Szilard and persons who really had the conviction that that alone you could do something in the world, that there weren't problems that were so big you couldn't tackle them. And it occurred, I'd always had as one of my close friends a Chinese, an older Chinese who did his graduate work with Fieser at the same time that I did, and in the same laboratory, Fred Chang. 86 now. And so I, you know, had known something about China, and it occurred to me that after the Cultural Revolution went over in 76, that by 1980 the first undergraduates would be coming out, and that chemistry must be in really a parlous state in China. So, and at that time, delegations were coming through, and I signed up to talk to, just meet with one group, and so explained how I would be willing to help in any way I could, and. That one thing that I thought might be helpful was for them to bring a bunch of their teachers from the university together and have me just go over how we taught undergraduate, or how I taught, but I said how we taught organic chemistry at Harvard, so that they could see what kind of changes had occurred in the last 20 or 30 years, and that was and I said that you don't really have to worry about travel expenses, that I would pay my own way, and then, you know, didn't hear anything until finally I got a letter from the president of Fudan University in Shanghai, an old mathematician, saying, yeah, that would be good. And would I come? And when did I come? In the fall of 1980. So I went over for 3 weeks and then came back to be my graduate students and returned for another 3 weeks. and taught and went over really a year's work in lecturing in the morning and giving them problems and so forth and so on. Well, they had done their part. They had brought in about 50 persons ranging in age from 45 to more than 70. There were no younger persons they could bring in. They just didn't exist. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Cultural Revolution had cut it off total. And the, yeah, and I've got a picture of that class. Oh, yeah. And there. Of these Chinese characters studying their organic chemistry. And the upshot of it was that without exception, each one of them said, look, what you're talking to us about must be a graduate course. There is no way we could, you know, we could begin to make these changes, for the most part, had to do with mechanism, right? As opposed to remembering the names of 2,000 organic compounds. So I returned from that with a conviction that there you couldn't help them by working with the teachers in place, and that the only way you were going to be able to help was by bringing young persons over. So they asked me if I would come back the next year and help them get research started. And I said yes, but meanwhile had made a contact at Fudan University who had received his PhD degree from Hip Dauben at the University of Washington, and who knew how terrible things were. So anyway, came back, and he and I then drew up a plan by which they would select, say, 40 or 50 students and devise a procedure for selecting them nationally. And make arrangements for them to go to a language school in southern China that was being run by the university, by UCLA at the time. And so we drew up this plan, and I said I would take then the responsibility for placing them in what I considered universities in the top 30 or so in the United States, and would see that their tuition was paid by the place. Well, they didn't, and so we drew it up and they sent it to the Ministry of Education at the time, and then I went to Beijing and talked about it, and they, well, how can you as an individual do that? And I said, well, that's my problem, and I just guarantee you that I can do it. I've got enough friends, even without Illinois. so that I can do that. And I must say, they did a superb job. That it was a good plan. They knew what their kids had been taught. We couldn't. I knew there was an incredible gap between any examination, which I showed it to a professor, a teacher of organic chemistry or physical chemistry or anything here, would say, well, look, we can't admit anybody who has taken such an elementary examination. But my conviction turned out to be right, that if you know, you get the best kids out of a system, even though the system may not be the best, and that they'll do all right. And so I wasn't able to convince all the places that I tried to get them into, but I convinced, of course, enough to take the 50, and that started. The first class came over in 82, I guess it was, and ran that until things began to change, and this Li Peng, who is the premier now, became head of the State Education Commission. And boy, the last time I went to Beijing and talked to him, it was clear that he wasn't interested in anything like this. And so then the word came out, next year we're going to cut it in half. And I said, you're not cutting my program in half, you're cutting it out. Because all the people who took part in this in the early stages were my friends, and I'm not going to go back to half of them. And so, sorry, I'm dropping you. But anyway, so about 250 of those kids have almost all got their PhD now. I mean, nobody bounced out. Not a single one ever failed a course.
Wow.
You believe that?
That's quite a record.
Yeah. And then when you get the assessments back, it's, you know, it's what you might expect. Except for the fact that a third of them were really, you know, rated as the best student I've had in 20 years or something like that. And then there's a fine middle third, and then there was a third that might just as well not have come. But, you know, nevertheless, nobody's bouncing them out because they're turning out perfectly good work. But there's an example of, you know, trying to do something and doing the best you can and really having falling far short. Hi, can I see you later?
Yes, I just wanted to borrow your phone.
Oh, okay. But I thought it was worth a try.
Oh, it is. It's a, has anything else like that been done that you know of? Or was this the first?
Well, it's the only one in chemistry, and then there was a program in biochemistry. And they, I think, made, and then there was a program in physics. But these were done either officially or semi-officially through a national organization, and therefore they had to be, their students had to be available to, well, all, if it had been chemistry, and all 189 places that give a PhD in chemistry. And that seemed to me to be a pretty inefficient way of trying to raise the standards in China. And then you know, well, you know partly what happened, but even before Tiananmen Square, two students, both physical chemists graduating from Rice, went back. They were the first ones back. When they got back, they were asked, you know, what kind of skills do you have, and did you learn English? And they said yes, and so they put them to teaching English. And those two kids are still teaching English with PhDs in chemistry. The person, one and a third that I know about, and there wouldn't be very many more because the Chinese network is as fully developed as any network I've ever seen. So anything happens to one Chinese, all of the 2,000 of them in the United States know about it. But a guy went back from Canada, and they found out that he'd learned how to drive a car, so he became chauffeur to the president of the university. So it wasn't just Tiananmen Square, it's the old professors who were just damned if they were going to let these youngsters back into the university and show them and everybody else up.
Mm-hmm.
So it, from the point of view of China, it's total failure, and it's an opportunity that's lost.
Yes.
damn lucky if 25 years from now, good ones will be going back. But I enjoyed it. I went over 5 times. The program ran very smoothly. Did just what it was supposed to do. All right.
Well, I thank you again very much for another enjoyable afternoon, and appreciate you taking the time.
Well, thank you.